Our scripture reading today is from James 2, verses 14 through 17. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill," and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our tradition is to stand as the gospel is before us, as it is read and as we listen. Helps us focus a little bit. If you're comfortable doing that and able to stand, I invite you to do so at this time. This is Mark 7, 24 and following. I will only be reading to verse 30. Sue, I'm sorry if you've got this slide set up, but I did take out 31 through 7. You can read that over lunch. From there, Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. Yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile, a Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home, found the child lying in the bed, and the demon gone. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I might mention the cover of your bulletin. It's a painting by Salvador Dali, surrealist painter, The Persistence of Memory. I was looking for something that went with persistence, and I love that painting, put it in there. I'm not sure how I can tie it in with the sermon, so we'll pretend I did. Shall we do that? We read from James, we read from Mark. Yeah, thank you. We'll just pretend that we had that all fixed and planned. Another part of the reading that we didn't read aloud was from Proverbs. You ever read out of Proverbs? We don't do that. I don't know that I've ever done a sermon exclusively out of Proverbs. Proverbs is these pithy one-word little statements to help us in living our faith. How many of you remember Benjamin Franklin? I read a biography of him this past year, and he, quite an intriguing man, but he had his Poor Richard's Almanac, and he had pithy little sayings. You remember some of those? Penny saved is a penny earned. Can't think of any right off the top of my head, but nothing's sure. There we go. See, some of us, there's some Franklinians in here. But Proverbs is, maybe this is where he got the idea for the Poor Richard's Almanac, was out of Proverbs, because it has these statements. Out of Proverbs 22, there were four. I'll just hit these. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. And favor is better than silver or gold. Favor, interesting word. It just says favor there. But do you know the word favor in Hebrew is hen? Did I pronounce it right, Renee? Okay. It occurs 2,580 times in the Old Testament. That's a few. And it usually is God's favor upon us. So, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. God's favor is better. The poor and the rich have this in common: the Lord is maker of all. That helps us break down some of those barriers, doesn't it? Build some of that inclusiveness, reminds us of who our brothers and sisters are. We sometimes want to just challenge ourselves across ethnic or language barriers, but here's a barrier that's even harder to cross, and many times, that about rich and wealth and poverty. Verse 9, those who are generous are blessed, for they share their bread with the poor. Not a surprise to any of us, it's a central tenet of our
New Testament, our Old Testament, is who and how we are in our relationship with God, a God of compassion and generosity and hospitality. This is central to what we're about. There's an axiom that out of giving to the poor and sharing with the poor that we are blessed, but I'm not sure that that's safe because some people want that cause and effect. If I give to the poor, then I'll get something back, and it's a dangerous edge. Verse 8, though, is interesting. It says, whoever sows injustice will reap calamity, and the rod of anger will fail. I read that several times and scratched my head several times. So then I begin to look at translational variances. Here is the New English Bible version. It says, whoever sows injustice will reap calamity, and the end of their work will be the rod. Well, that changes it a little bit, and I don't know. But it was the International Standard Version that I liked the best, so I'm kind of picking and choosing my definitions here. Whoever sows wickedness reaps trouble, and the anger they use for a tool will be destroyed. And I thought about that, and I thought, that is a relief to me. I don't know about you, but it seems like there are people who are wielding weapons politically today, and those who weep will reap calamity, and their power will be broken. I appreciate hearing that. And that reassurance, we know that God will not be defeated in human history. God is always God. So do with that as you will. I will leave those and those four verses out of Proverbs. Let's go to the gospel lesson. That's where this persistence comes from. This is where we want to talk about this. And it begins with the part of the passage that I always seem to skip over, and that is that if you're good at geography, and I am not with Middle Eastern geography, but Jesus is traveling from A to B, but he goes in a route that really is not the best route. It's not the most straightforward route. He travels into Gentile territory. He travels out of the way that's easy into a place that's kind of not where he's supposed to go. It's a place of non-Jews. It's a place of Syrophoenicians. That's what she's called. So in doing so, he does one thing. He demonstrates that he is Christ of all. But he goes to a house to be incognito. That has been a relief to me once I started ministry, and it's been a few years since that began, but I would get tired at times. Do you ever get tired of just the day-to-day and here we go again? I felt guilty that I felt that way about ministry. I mean, this is great. You pay me to sit around and read the Bible. How much better can that be? This is awesome. But I would be weary. And so Jesus goes to this house, and he entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. He was needing a time to step away and to recharge. He was human. He knows. He was aware of how we are and who we are. Regardless, a non-Jewish woman, this Gentile, this Syrophoenician woman finds him. And he doesn't just discount her immediately as because she is a woman. Now, this particular account occurs in Mark and in Matthew. It does not occur in Luke or John, the other two Gospels. But it occurs in Matthew and Mark. And in Matthew's version, as a matter of fact, when the woman shows up, the disciples tell Jesus, get rid of her. Get her out of here. She's intruding. She's making us nervous. And we just want peace and quiet, and we want to get rid of her. But her daughter is ill. We can commiserate. We understand. We know that we will do anything when we have a child or a loved one who's ill. And she falls at Jesus' feet. We don't want to pass that point up. She does two things. She honors him and his authority. And she demonstrates humility. That's not a word we're hearing a lot in our common discourse, is it? Humility. In a time when people are fighting for their rights and demonstrating, oh, but this is mine and this is mine and this is, and shooting each other over parking places and stuff, like it's just crazy stuff. Humility it's something we need to revisit. But she demonstrates those and she asks Jesus, my daughter is ill. I need you to heal her. And he says to her, this is the troubling passage, let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. First time I ever read that, I thought, that's kind of insulting. He's calling her a dog. He's calling her people dogs. He's calling the non-Jewish people less than. Maybe that's why Luke and John left it out of their Gospels. Because there's stuff there that was hard for them to unpack or to take apart. Can you imagine the repercussions of making a comment like that today? It seems the very opposite of the Christ we know, the inclusive, the loving, the considerate Christ that we know and love. So I read a variety of different commentaries and interpretations to try and see if there was something I was missing, something I didn't understand. You know, and it is meant to illustrate that Jesus came for the Jews first. Jesus is a Jewish male. He was born and raised. He knows the Jewish scriptures. He is well-versed in all the Jewish traditions. And he is coming to them first. He is the Messiah that is predicted. He is the Messiah called by God. And he is coming, and he's coming to them to help them in their continuing journey with God. But those people outside the Jewish tradition are also being reached by him. Those are the outsiders, the second step of his ministry, or in this case, the ones he's calling dogs. Now, I thought maybe we know he's tired. He went somewhere and he wanted to be incognito. He didn't want anyone to know he was there. Maybe he was just tired. Have any of you ever been tired? Have any of you ever had someone ask you to do something and you're tired? I was working Friday. I'd been working all day long. I was hot and sweaty. I had sawdust everywhere. Sawdust in places that I didn't know I had places. And I was worn and weary and sweaty and worn down and just starting to close down and head in for dinner. And a woman walked up to my garage and said, I'm sorry to bother you, but my car battery's dead. Could you help me start my car? I wanted to say, you know, I got a shower and dinner waiting. I didn't. I didn't even hesitate. I said, yeah, I got jumper cables. We can do this. I have a car that's new to me, a Prius. Anybody know about Priuses? There's no battery in the front anymore. They hide it in the back under about 16 layers of hidey places and holes and flaps and jacks. I didn't even know how to get to it. We learned together. Got her on our way. But maybe that's what it was. Maybe he was just tired and he just, for a second, said, well, you know, usually we give it to the children. We don't throw it to the dogs. Maybe, have you ever said something and regretted after you said it because you were tired or worn or overwhelmed? And yet Jesus doesn't get that way. Jesus is the model for us on how to be and who to be and the perfect walk. And he might have been tired, but I don't believe that he ever would have slipped. And not only that, but it isn't in the core of his being to have considered the Gentiles less than anyone else. It's incompatible with how I know our Lord. So that, I didn't buy that. Jesus is in compassion and love to his very core. So I thought maybe it's the word. Sometimes, you know, we're reading a translation of a translation of a translation of, and maybe if we go back, the word, the Greek word, maybe that will help. So I went back, and the Greek word for dog is, anybody speak Greek? I'm safe. Kynarios. Kynarios. I think dog is easier. So the Greek word is dog, and it occurs exactly twice in the Bible. It occurs in this story in Mark, and it occurs in the same story that Matthew tells of the same event. Only those two places does it occur. And a translation, as near as anybody could pull together, says it's a dog or a small dog or a house dog or a puppy. I thought, well, puppy's a little better. Let the children be fed first, for it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the puppy. That sounds a little better, doesn't it? But still, it's ingratiating and denigrating. It just didn't soften it. It didn't satisfy my understanding of what and what he is about. So I'm not sure that I have that completely unpacked and understood as well as I would like. There are some puzzles in the Bible. Any of you ever get it all figured out, you give me a call. But here's one that continues to nag at me and will continue to challenge me and challenge me whether or not I ever consider one group that sits at the table and another at their feet. Regardless of that piece of referring to those under the table as dogs, the message of the pericope is very clear. She comes to him, she asks, he says, well, this isn't for you first. She says, but yes, but we are receiving your message as well and your care and your love, and we believe in you as well. And in that, there are two things. She doesn't give up, first off. She says, sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. That sir is worth noting. She is acknowledging his authority. She is acknowledging she knows who he is. She is acknowledging that he is the Messiah, the Christ. We need to do that more often, don't we? She's not arguing about being called a dog. She's not arguing about her classification. She's not arguing about his phraseology. So maybe at that age and that time, something around that had a different meaning that we've lost over time. Or is it humility? Is it back to that word humility, the acknowledgement? If we built a hierarchy, a pyramid of humanity, well, all of us going to church on Sunday and good, faithful Christians, we'd be somewhere up in the top of that pyramid, wouldn't we? Our humility gets the better of us. We're all down on the bottom layer, ladies and gentlemen. We are all down at the bedrock. We are the peons, the peasants, the vassals. And we need to acknowledge that. So she says, sir, and I bow before you. She's on her knees before him. In that day and age, women were second-class citizens at best. And she would have been conditioned to keep silence. She would have been conditioned not to speak out. And especially in this gathering where she's not with the proper escorts and chaperones. But she's speaking out. She's speaking out because she has faith. She loves her daughter and she has faith and knows that he can heal her. So she persists. Jesus responds, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. The demon has left your daughter. She's healed. Now, he doesn't specify that I've healed her or she has healed the daughter, but the daughter is healed out of what has happened here, out of this moment of faith, of persistence. We need to begin with that humility. We need to remember that we are not royalty. Any of you kings or queens? I didn't ever check that, but we need to check our faith. Do we believe enough to say, we will come, bow before you, and allow you? Do we have enough faith? Even as much faith as a mustard seed? Enough to move mountains? Do we have enough faith to come before him humbly and be pushed away gently and to say, no, my faith says I will not leave. I will persist because you are the Lord. You are the God of all creation and you can do anything. The Lord is the maker of us all. So Jesus and a woman whose daughter is ill. It connects us with the Christ. It connects us with a man who was tired and yet responded. And a woman who had faith and who persisted. Lord, help us in our humility. Strengthen us in our faith. Help us persist on behalf of ourselves. Help us persist even more, Lord, on behalf of others. Amen.